welcome to Rewatchable episode 271. Today we'll be discussing Sense8, the very first episode. It's called Limbic Resonance. My name is Danielle, and I will be your host not only of this episode, but one of your main hosts for this round, and I am so excited. I just want to say what's going on. As we say in the Sense8 fandoms, our newbies don't know that yet, but they will soon-ish. And if you listen to other Rewatchable ROMs, you might recognize me as Danielle Wine Pizza, that girl who shows up randomly and then somehow became a regular panelist at some point during the Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Angel round. But some of you might also remember me as the host of our Veronica Mars round that we did way back in 2013. And I am excited to be back. It's been a long time. And to come back for one of my favorite shows in the entire world is super exciting. As always, if you want to get in contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, or you can visit our Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. If you're new to our podcast, I just want to put out a quick reminder or a quick note that we do try to keep this podcast as spoiler-free as possible. So if you could keep your feedback spoiler-free as well, that would be great. Obviously, we are more than happy to talk about the episodes that we're talking about the current week. But please, I know it's so exciting and like that you love the show so much if you're a super fan and you're coming to us. But please try not to jump ahead with your feedback or anything like that. We have some newbies manning. Basically, one of our hosts, Brittany, she mans our Twitter and we do not want to spoil her at all. That's not something that we want to do. So if you could please keep it as spoiler-free as possible, that would be great. And speaking of Brittany and our other hosts, I'm actually joined by Brittany and Caitlin, our newbies, and our super fan is Karen. And they're all here with me today, and they are going to be listening to me stumble and fall as I try to get back into hosting. Oh, goodness. Hello, everybody.
Hi. Oh.
Let's get into some fun facts so you can get to know us and get to know the sounds of our voices so that you can distinguish between us. Brittany, why don't you start this week?
Sure. So I'm Brittany. I was not on the introduction episode because I was away in Sweden, but I am here now and happy to be back as a newbie again because that's my life forever. I will be watching Sense8 for the first time, kind of excited about it. And my fun fact is that I was just in Milwaukee this morning, and now I'm in New Jersey, which is where I'm from. I flew out there to see a Shawn Mendes concert. So that's just the type of things I do, is fly to Wisconsin to see Shawn Mendes.
Danielle and I were talking earlier today wondering if that's the only reason why you flew out there.
Yep. It was.
That's so random.
It was the catalyst for our trip. I went with my brother.
That's amazing. Well, I hope you had some cheese curds or some good beer while you were in Wisconsin.
Yes, lots of good beer. It was awesome. Went on a brewery tour. It was fun. It was a good 2 days. That's all you need for Milwaukee, 2 days.
Yes, I would definitely say that's accurate. Caitlin, what's going on with you?
Well, besides my baseball team being in Milwaukee right now... coincidence. My fun fact is that I just got hired on to a ESL teaching company online.
Yay!
So I'll be teaching English to Chinese kids bright and early in the morning because everything's on Beijing time. So it's like 6 and 7 in the morning.
Woo-hoo. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's awesome. But yes, that is very early in the morning to be awake and thinking about teaching.
And have to be like overly cheerful and enthusiastic because the kids can be as young as like 5. So I don't drink coffee, so we'll see how this goes.
I'm sure you'll be great. Karen, what is your fun fact for today?
My fun fact is that I'm hanging out with Danielle right now. She came to visit Kristen and I for the weekend. She's in my bedroom recording her part while I'm out in the living room doing mine. And later today, we're going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is really exciting. And we figured out that a year ago, we saw Spider-Man Homecoming in theaters, a group of us at Indie PopCon 1 year. Kristen was there and Danya and our friend Liz, and it was really awesome. And it's going to be a slightly smaller group. It's just going to be me, Kristen, and Danielle this time. But I love seeing movies with people, so it's going to be really fun.
Rub it in.
rub it in and also take all of my potential fun facts.
I know.
Let's see. My name is Danielle, and my fun fact is I slept in Karen's bed last night by myself, I guess.
It was so hot. I slept out on the couch because I wasn't feeling well. Sometimes the heat gets to me. So I was like, Danielle, you can sleep in my bed.
actually, my actual fun fact, now that I'm looking around your bedroom, I saw The Fifth Element for the first time.
Yes.
And it was a thing that happened. So...
Sounds very much how Brittany reacted to seeing Tremors.
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Nobody loves my movies.
I do sometimes. It's fine. Just that one was not one of my favorites, but it's okay. It's totally fine. All right. So fun facts done. Now we get to talk about Sense8, which I am really excited to do. I was watching the episode actually like 10 minutes ago, and I've been bursting to talk to the newbies about it. So let's get into it. We have our show synopsis brought to us today by Ariana, and she writes, in this episode, Daryl Hannah locates 8 randomly selected but predominantly white and conveniently English-speaking people around the world who can sense each other and are being hunted by an Uncle Pennybags. Okay. The first thing, I don't think it's a spoiler, so I think it's fine, but I really quickly want to address the conveniently English-speaking. Karen and I were talking about this just to double-check, but they do make mention at some point in the series that they are actually speaking in their native language, but we're just hearing it in English. They do bring that up because, obviously, as you can kind of see in this episode, they are trying to be as true to the cultures as possible, and like they bring you to the locations. So to have the people speaking English is a little jarring. But it's just to kind of dumb it down for us because we unfortunately don't know as many languages as they do. But yeah, so let's get into it. First of all, I kind of wanted to get some initial reactions to the show and to the episode from our newbies. Were any things that stuck out to you? How did you kind of feel going into it? And how did that first episode kind of stick with you? Or what was your take on it? Let's start with Caitlin.
I thought it was kind of boring. Sorry, there really isn't all that much action, and it felt a little longer than it needed to be. And also, I have no idea who anybody is, which I figure is expected. But and that is an opening sequence, and I'm not sure I would have gone past that if I didn't have to.
I will say it's very slow. There's just a lot going on, and I don't know. I'm guessing I'm supposed to care about all of them, but I kept wanting to be like, oh, I care about this character. That's who I need to pay attention to. This is like, you know, that's just how I watch TV. I'm like, oh, this is the character that I'm going to like when they like keep cutting back to them. But I didn't feel connected to any of them initially. I think it's just so much going on. It's so much.
It's so much. And with other TV shows, I think it's a little bit easier because a lot of those characters are in the same places or they're interacting in ways, so they kind of bring the characters together and you aren't like isolated every time you visit a different character. Whereas here, I think the first time I watched it, I was not only confused as to what was going on, but I agree, it was slow and it's hard to keep track of who is who and like what their names are. That generally should start clearing up a little bit. But until then, like, it's totally fine. I will keep trying to remind you of names again, because I know that is really difficult. And I do agree, this episode doesn't have a lot of action in it. There is that opening scene, which I do want to talk about a little bit to get your more thoughts on that one, which is sort of action heavy. And then there's a little bit with the Chicago cop Will. But other than that, there's not too much that's going on. Karen, what was it like to sit there and watch this again for the first time? Was it how you remembered it? Was it a little bit different?
Yeah, I've seen this. So I think this was like my third time watching season one, at least. Really like it. I do think it's slow. I think it's slow on purpose. The show is very it takes its time with the characters and you really get to know them very well. And like I was saying on the intro episode, like that's not usually a thing for me because I like the action sequences and everything, but it allows you to really understand these people and then see them in situations as, you know, the problems arise. So I will say that I do remember it being very confusing in the beginning because you're just like, what is going on? They don't explain anything to you. And unfortunately for us, because we decided to do this one episode at a time and because we watch it on a weekly basis, we're going to take our time going through this. And I think this show in particular lends itself to binging because you just want to kind of figure out what the hell is going on. And you're not going to get those answers that soon since we do have to do it week to week, but I would say hang in there. It does pick up and it does get very intense during some parts, so hopefully if you guys don't get too bored, you'll like it a few episodes down the road.
Well, let's jump in on talking about the confusing stuff. And I think one of the most confusing things, at least that I remember from my first watch of this, was that opening scene. So you have Daryl Hannah in an abandoned church. We find out later that abandoned church is in Chicago. And she's seemingly by herself, but she's not by herself. And then you have his name is Jonas, and he seems very close to Angelica, which is Daryl Hannah's character's name. And he kind of comes in. What did you take from this scene? I know they were really vague about things, but did you? Oh, gosh, it's so hard to talk about. With the characters popping in and out, was that an issue for you? Were you able to kind of figure out who was there, who wasn't, or was that a little confusing?
Well, I think the more confusing thing was when she was alone. Like, I figured out the, you know, pretty quickly that, you know, the one guy wasn't, like, they both weren't there, but then maybe that other guy was there. I think it was more confusing later on as it keeps cutting back to that scene in the church, like not the bigger sequence, but like the like little cuts in and out of the episode back to it. Mm-hmm. And I, going into the show, knew absolutely nothing, like zero of what this was about. But I did read the little Netflix description before hitting play. And, you know, it says like 8 people or telepathically or something connected. And I was like, oh, okay. So clearly we're witnessing some sort of origin of how it's going to explain how these 8 people are connected. So I think that helped. I don't think I would have gotten it without having read that single sentence beforehand.
Yeah, I agree. I had that general sense of knowledge, so was able to put those pieces together. My vague understanding was that this was like the birth of the group. And mm-hmm. I couldn't help but think that was kind of an asshole move to put that on those seemingly random people, since apparently it causes a lot of suffering.
Yeah, I will say no comment to that, just because we do get more information about the birth and about why those people were selected at some point. But yes, it was in fact a birth. Obviously it's not a physical birth, but it is very much like this mental birth and like a very intense process. And you can see from the woman that she has gone through quite a bit. And in some of the interactions that she has with Jonas, the guy who was from Lost, that's really the only other thing that I know him from. I can't remember his actor name. And then you have this other guy, this kind of creepy guy, come in as well. And I don't know. What did you think about Daryl Hannah shooting herself? I feel like that is a very jarring way to start a series before this, but before the title sequence even kicks in.
That's why I said I don't think I would have gone past it if I wasn't doing this. It was just, it felt too much. Mm-hmm. For an open, I feel like if I had been a bit more invested in what the heck was going on, I might have been less jarred by it, but as like the opening thing, it was not appealing in any way, obviously, because it's a suicide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a rough one, too, because you can see she has like pockmarks on her arms and she looks like she hasn't slept in a while and she just seems very not in a good place. Like it's not a great opening scene at all. And it's a very interesting scene that it's not representative of everything else that we kind of see in this episode, because I mean, you might be able to tell, and Ariana put a note in here about how this show is filmed like they had all of the money of the Matrix behind them. And so this scene is very much in an enclosed space. It's very dark. There's not a lot going on. And then later everything kind of opens up. So it's a very different scene than we see for anything else that happens in the episode. Does anyone have any questions about that scene before we move on to the different characters? I don't want to say too much more about it because I don't want to give anything away.
I was going to say, I have a lot of questions, but none of which you're going to answer. So I feel like we could come back to them in the later episodes.
Okay. I mean, I'm more than willing to get back into my habit of no comments. Hashtag no comments.
Yeah, so. The listeners don't need to hear.
It'd just be a list of them. All right. So let's start talking about the characters. So the first character we're going to talk about is a Chicago cop. His name is Will. He is one of the first ones, I think, that we see in terms of like a longer stay with him. As Ariana notes, he sleeps with a gun next to his bed. He's very much into his job. I think he's interesting in how he represents Chicago cops and like police, as a lot of people know, or at least a lot of people know Chicago for their issues with police and with like the South Side of Chicago and all that kind of stuff. So it was interesting, I think, to me to see him be drawn in here. What were your first takes on Will as a character, Brittany?
He was the cute one that I'm probably going to want to see the most of.
Okay. All right.
But his first scene, you know, he's very high strung, wound up, obviously, as we see by the grabbing a gun when he wakes up from his nightmare. Yeah, I think he's going to be the one kind of out of the most of them who's like in a rough spot, especially with like, you know, he was like our entry point to all these people having headaches and, you know, just being a bit off kilter and not knowing what to do about it. So, yeah, but like I said, initial reaction, he's the cute one. So,
Kaylin,
cute, bland white guy was my first impression. Basically, they give him more depth as it goes. So I appreciate like the arc he takes through this episode, and he seems to be one of the more rounded characters by the end of the first episode. I feel like only a couple of them actually are very rounded by the first episode. Most of them are pretty flat, but he's one of the couple that seems to, or that they've developed it with any sense. But first impression was like, oh, good, we're following the bland white guy. But I liked what they did with him through the episode, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
I mean, that's pretty fair. I was actually sitting and watching with Karen, and we were talking about our initial reactions to him. And Karen, you had, when you first saw this show, you had a reaction that was kind of similar to Caitlin's, don't you? Or didn't you?
With Will?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a little bit white bread to me. I don't dislike him. I do think that his storyline, especially as it goes on, becomes quite important. But initially, he's just one of the ones that kind of blends into the background for me. And I've really taken to some of the other characters. And Will just... I do like that he's a cop. I think that's interesting, and I think that gives him a certain, not only a certain perspective, but an ability to like figure out a little bit more of the mystery and that kind of thing. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, he didn't really stand out to me.
I do want to note and kind of talk about what Will hears and sees, and as well as the other characters. But Will, I think, is interesting because Will is one of the people, one of the few that not only has insight into what the other characters are kind of seeing and hearing, but he also has that weird nightmare in the beginning that includes not only Angelica, the sort of angel looking, the Daryl Hannah character, but it also has a little girl kind of running around. And you see actually Will as a little boy following her. And he is one of the only characters. There's a few other characters who do see like flashbacks. One we'll get to where he's like a little boy as well. But what did you think of that nightmare that Will had?
I didn't realize that was Will until this moment. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes, the little boy in his dream was him.
That just felt like a random sequence to me, so I sort of ignored it for the most part. So, okay, that makes more sense in context. Good to know.
Yes. I completely understand the fact that like it was hard to figure out that that was him because there are so many characters in here, and then you immediately start throwing in younger versions of them at the same time, and it's a lot to keep track of. Gosh, I don't want to give anything away. This is so hard to get back into. Does anybody have any more thoughts on Will at all before we move on to some of the other characters?
I feel like, especially in the current climate of police brutality and all the Black men who are being shot, that story has the potential to be very resonant right now, especially with the fact that he helps that kid when no one else wants to. So, and I know the show is very recent, but a lot of these issues like have only come up into the public discourse even more recently. So I'll be interested to see how they play that out and how it kind of lines up with the current political climate. But I feel like his story as a white cop in Chicago showing compassion for this Black kid who points a gun at him, like, has a potential to be very powerful and important.
Did you feel like the show handled it well or was going too far to one side or too far to another with Will's characterization in him, like, helping this kid or the way that he was interacting with his partner?
I felt like the nurse was the most over the top because I'm not sure that what she did was actually legal to like say we don't take people with life-threatening injuries anymore. Like, I'm pretty sure if you get federal funding, you have to, no matter what. So I was a little taken aback by that. But I mean, they're clearly making him kind of a Boy Scout, and with Karen calling him White Bread, I'm like, oh God, is he our Riley?
Oh no.
And I hope that doesn't go that way.
It took me a second to figure out what you were saying because there's a character in here named Riley.
See, I don't know anyone's name yet. So.
Yes. Is this our version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer's Riley?
Riley Finn, the most white bread of white bread Boy Scout military figures.
Oh boy. Well, point taken. And I will not say anything about that, but I actually think that's a really good segue into our next character whose name is Riley. Riley is the DJ. She is the one with the sort of white-ish platinum blonde hair with the blue streak in it. She's known for being the girl with the blue streak in her hair. When we meet her, she's DJing at a club in London. So she's going to be mainly in like the Western Europe sphere. And she is a really interesting character in that she's very artistic, but you see her kind of get into odd situations or situations where it looks like she doesn't want to be there. And I was curious what your first impressions of Riley were. Let's go with Brittany.
I was going to say, it's weird because, like, I like her. I think she's fine. I feel like it was a little weird with Riley. Like, my first impression of her was, oh, she's kind of cool. Like, I like that where, you know, in London or where were we? Berlin?
Where is she? She was in London.
She was in London. Okay. Yeah. I thought I saw a double-decker bus somewhere in there. So, yeah, I couldn't really get a sense of what her deal is, meaning like what, who these guys are that she's with. And there's that whole thing at the end, which is like a mess, but I liked her fine. She was fine. I mean, I liked that they used her to sort of get us into, I guess, what more of the show is going to be about, where she is the one who kind of connects with Will in a, like, you know, more meaningful sense. Like, she's, like, they talk, you know, like, that's, like, a big thing. So I was, I liked watching her for that portion of the show to give us a little look into what I'm assuming, because I don't know, is probably going to be more likely, where these characters, you're not, we're not cutting to, like, different cities all the time, where, like, where it's just, you know, scene, scene, scene. Now the scenes sort of blend together, even if we are in two or three different locations at a time. But they're just more seamless than, you know, these blocks of, oh, here's this person, here's this person, here's this person. It's like her character allows us now, at the end at least, to blur the lines a little bit, which I think is going to be interesting.
That sounds about right. I didn't have a lot of thoughts on her. Seemed like she was around some really shitty human beings.
Yes.
and was getting herself into some really shitty situations. But I like that she's a DJ. That can't be easy for a woman. So good for her, I guess.
Yeah, no. And I think it's interesting that she was the one who was being used to kind of showcase the different ways that we're going to see the characters interact, or we're going to see them together, in that she, I believe she popped into our San Francisco couple at some point when she was like sitting on a bench, or she obviously at the end, she's there with Will, talking to Will, and she's like in Chicago and she'd never been there before. So she's a, in general, she's a really great sort of connective tissue kind of character. And I think that this episode kind of sets you up to see that, which, I mean, Brittany, you definitely called that out right away. Karen, did you have any, did anything stick out to you on this rewatch in terms of Riley's character at all?
Not anything different, really. I liked Riley from the beginning because I thought she was just really cool. I also like that she's kind of quiet and she seems to just enjoy observing people and everything. Like, she's, she kind of looks like she could be a wild child with, you know, the blue streak in her hair and the DJing thing, but she's actually very reserved, and I like seeing that balance in her.
I think one of my favorite parts that I had forgotten about was her being a DJ and them commenting on how great of a DJ she is, but then also seeing her DJ-ness bleed into Will's life, like how he thought that there was this club or like these people having a party right next door and it ended up being an empty apartment, but because he could hear her music like just so loudly and so clearly, I thought that was really interesting. They seem to pair them together a lot, and I didn't notice that in this first episode as much as I did this time. But I think part of the reason why I wasn't really paying attention to those two, because I do like Will and Riley as characters, but I do happen to have an all-time favorite character in this show, and I was paying a lot of attention to him. And he is Lito. He is the actor.
Lito!
The actor from Mexico. And he doesn't have a lot of connective tissue with the rest of the characters in this show, in this episode. But we kind of see him as a person. And I don't know about you, and this is going to be my favorite scene, but his introduction into the show, I think, is my favorite out of all of them. Was anyone confused when they first met Lito? Like, what was going on? Why he was fighting for the love of a nun?
Yes. I definitely was. I remember watching this the first time, and he washes his bloody hand off in the holy water, and I'm like, who is this dude? And then you realize, oh, it's a movie set. And it was a really good trick. It really worked on me.
I realized something was up when the nun had really bad line delivery, and I was like, oh, okay, something's okay. Going on here. exactly. I was like, oh my God, what is going on? And then, oh, she's acting. Got it. Okay.
So it was the nun that gave it away. Oh man.
Yeah, I agree. As soon as they were in the church, though, I was like when, you know, they were both delivering lines. I was like, oh, we're on a set somewhere. I don't know where we're on a set, but we're on a set.
What did you guys think of Leto in general? I mean, we see him as this tough guy, as like his persona that he's playing. But as a character, did you guys get any sense as to who he is or how you feel about him?
He was funny. I didn't really get a sense of, you know, whether he likes being an actor or if he's full. Like, I couldn't read if he's like full of himself or just, you know, is... I don't know. I didn't read him as being full of himself, but then, you know, he's like making kissy faces at his own picture. So I don't really know. yeah, I don't know. I don't know who, again, I don't know these people. I don't feel like I walked away knowing any one person, except maybe actually, we'll talk about her later on, but the Indian girl, I really liked her. But yeah, but Leto, I don't know, man. I hope he remains funny like that and he is not actually full of himself. But he does, you know, seem to be in a weird place. I don't know if he is in a weird place, but to me, he's in like this place of just like trying to be an actor, trying to be serious about his job and, you know, do a good job, but something's up with it. I don't know if he's just not into acting anymore or if he's, you know, doubting himself, but something's going on with his connection to his career. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that is. If it's anything, could be reading him completely wrong, but only spent 10 minutes with him. So
I was watching the scenes in the trailer through my fingers because it was triggering my secondhand embarrassment so badly.
When the nun was hitting on him or
before.
The other scene? Okay. Okay.
Pretty much all of it, like when he's like doing like the vocal warm-ups and calling for Diet Cokes and stuff, like I was just cringing so hard. And then the nun comes in and hits on him and I'm like, this is just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, the fact that she was like still in the habit, I was like, oh God, can we not?
So uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a little... It's not fun to sit through because you can tell right away kind of what she was thinking. And then she kind of takes the cue from a wrong cue and then it just gets worse. But I mean, I make it known to pretty much everyone. I love Leto. Leto is my absolute favorite person. And I can't really tell you why yet, but I'm glad to hear that he was at least a little bit entertaining, if not completely cringeworthy at times. But yeah, let's move on to the Korean businesswoman. She is South Korean. Her name is Sun. Basically, I'm not sure how well it kind of translated, but she works at a company. It's like her family's company. And she works with her brother and she's trying to make a name for herself. And she's trying to be the businesswoman that she can be, but she gets dismissed all the time, which is really disheartening. And I was wondering how, I know, Karen, you love Sun.
I do. And it's hard because I always go back and forth. Like I love Leto so much. Leto might be my favorite as well, but I really do bounce back and forth between like four or five of them. I just love them so much. Sun is definitely one of them, again, for reasons that you'll see in the future. But I think what's really obvious here is that people do dismiss her and people underestimate her and she's angry about it. And I think as a woman in the world, that is very relatable. And she just ends up being so awesome. And I think her story is actually quite different from everybody else's. And I think that's really important to see.
How did you guys feel about her introduction? Because everyone else kind of gets, you get to see them as like what their job is, or you get to see them as slightly carefree, whereas I feel like Sun's is slightly different. How did you guys feel about meeting Sun for the first time, Caitlin?
I mean, I wanted her to punch that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because she clearly wanted to. I get the sense that she's supposed to be good at martial arts or something, since we saw her, like, doing moves at the very beginning, and then she's, like, clenching her fist.
And since Karen likes her.
Yes. Which is Karen's favorite thing ever. Yeah, did not love, like, so much sexism. It's so bad. So I hope we see her getting to overcome assholes like that.
I mean, she can focus on, you know, taking them down if chickens don't randomly appear on her desk at any given time. that scared me. I will say that.
Yeah.
Like, how scary would that be to be one of these eight and have, like, these things randomly appear, or these sounds like randomly shock you? I think the chicken was definitely the most jarring for sure.
And the worst part of it is knowing that it's not real. Like, it disappears. And
yeah, so you're, you can't, like, say anything.
I'm clearly going insane.
it's interesting. And it's interesting to see how each one in turn reacts to these things happening. Because some will, like, ask someone around them to hear the same thing, such as, we'll get to him in a minute, but like Wolfgang, and he's at the safe and he hears the sirens, and like he asks his friend Felix if he hears the sirens, while others like try to keep it to themselves but are still obviously very confused as to what's going on. I always love watching how they react to the things around them. All right, let's move on to the different character. Her name is Kala. She is that Indian woman. When we meet her, she is working, I think they say where she works. She works in like a lab. She's a scientist. And we meet her, and we meet her adorable dad. Her dad is the absolute sweetest guy. But we meet her, and she is a very religious person. Her faith is very important to her. And she basically is struggling with the fact that she has a marriage coming up. She's getting married to this guy that she's engaged to. And then she reveals, while she's at the temple, she reveals that she's not in love with him. And Brittany, I believe you said that you were most interested in Kala.
Yeah, because she like sets herself up as having such a great story, and then we never see her again. So I was like, oh, we're not going back to her. This is so disappointing.
She does get less time than everyone else, doesn't she?
Yeah. So like, we meet her dad, and she's like, you know, we get the, you know, she hears the thunder of Wolfgang's like funeral, you know, she hears all that. But yeah, and then she just, like, you know, off to work she goes. But then I thought that her scene and when she was praying was actually, and, you know, talking was most interesting, because it felt like it set it up, or set something up. But then we didn't get any more. So that was disappointing. I think that might be why I like her so much, is because we didn't see her that much. And I was, like, left wanting more.
I do like Kala. I like how culturally rich her scenes are. Like, even though we don't see a lot of her, like, we get a sense of, like, her relationship with her father. And we get a sense of just, like, how much her faith means to her. And just how gorgeous that whole scene with her praying was. I love like the different colors, and I just love how warm that whole thing feels. Caitlin, what did you think about Kala?
I liked her, though her story feels a bit, at least just from what was set up, a bit cliche. Like a lot of stories we've heard before. I also couldn't stop thinking while she was telling her story in this really clunky chunk of exposition, that I'm like, can those people like 5 feet from her not hear her? Is this not super awkward? Like, that's all I could think about. It was super distracting. I'm like, she's expositioning here, and like, there's people like 5 feet from her, and it was very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they were meant not to hear, or if that is, because this is not my religion, so I'm not sure how that works. Like, I don't know if they're okay with just putting it out there and not having it be a very private thing. So I didn't think about that.
Because, like, they weren't, like, watching her. They seemed like they were, like, talking to each other. But I'm like, she's not keeping her voice down or anything. So I feel like that would carry. So that kind of, the clunkiness, basically, of that distracted me. But, I mean, she's fine. I hope there it gets to be a little more nuanced than kind of the cliche story that's currently being set up.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on, though, to Wolfgang, just because Kala didn't have a lot to do in this episode. But I think that Wolfgang, we got quite a bit of a look at him, not only as he is now, but we got a flashback or two of him as well. So Wolfgang, he is from Germany. I believe he's in Berlin. And we meet him and we meet his best friend, Felix, who he does that job with and who is there with him at Wolfgang's dad's funeral. And what did you think about meeting someone at their father's funeral, especially in how he reacts to his father once he's laid to rest?
I mean, looking at the guy's face on the gravestone, I was like, he has the kind of face you probably hated in life. So.
The kind of face you would want to piss on.
Yeah, it was not shocking once you like see that face. Like, yeah, he looks like he needs to be pissed on.
I mean, and from what we see in that flashback, he's laughing at little Wolfgang while Wolfgang is like scared on stage trying to sing.
Yeah, some clear daddy issues with this one.
Britt, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say he has a lot of family baggage coming with him. So exactly what Caitlin was saying, and with having some daddy issues that he has to sort through, as I'm assuming he will during this season. Also, shout out to Felix's great, great sweater when he was making the keys. I loved that sweater so much.
Felix is fabulous. And he is one of the, I mean, they all sort of have their close friends. And their close friends kind of become second to their actual cluster, is kind of what it's going to be called. And Felix is always a really entertaining one. And he's always one I love to watch, especially in quiet moments where he's not quite sure what to do. Or when he's there with Wolfgang, as Wolfgang is trying to crack open the safe, just seeing how nervous he gets or like how confused he is when Wolfgang turns on the TV and he turns on like a singing competition like show. I don't know. It just made me laugh the way that Felix reacted to that.
Felix was like, to Wolfgang the way we are with Karen's movies, like, seriously, this is what you like?
So rude.
Not far off, though.
I'm wondering, should we tell them who we thought they were going to like, or should we wait until we get some more episodes in and see who they really gravitate toward?
I would wait.
Wait, okay.
I don't want to plant any seeds of like, yeah. like this person.
I'm probably super wrong anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It's fine. There was one other thing that I wanted to bring up with Wolfgang. I'm not, for me, some of the details get kind of lost, or like I have to sit and think about a lot of things that kind of happen on screen. So I'm not quite sure how clear it was to other people. But when we're at his dad's funeral, one of his cousins kind of comes up to him and is a jackass, basically. And then we meet also Wolfgang's uncle and his aunt, who are not great people either. And so we get a sense that his family, his shitty family, basically, is not only his dad, but like this extended family. And then you have his chosen family, who is Felix. And I was curious about how you felt about Wolfgang as a person, and then also seeing him in our very first introduction to him, not only like pissing on his dad's grave, but also stealing diamonds and like dealing with these terrible people. Does that make you see Wolfgang? Gosh, I know you just met him, but does that give you any sense of like how Wolfgang is as a person? Do you think he's going to be like antagonistic, or do you think he's going to be someone who tries to like rise above his situation? Yeah, I guess just any other thoughts about Wolfgang and like his character and his moral compass at all.
I feel like he's going to be the one who's resistant to whatever this ends up being, this thing that's bigger than them. I feel like he is very, you know, head down, just doing his job, you know, like not really. He has Felix. He's like just kind of wallowing in the life he's been dealt at this point. And I feel like anything outside of that is not going to get him motivated or excited. Like there's just, he's kind of just dead emotionally. It feels like there wasn't very much coming off of him. So I think this, whatever this turns out to be, if when he starts connecting with the cluster or figuring out what's going on, I think he's going to be very resistant to it, even if it's something he can't help.
Yeah, like Brittany, I thought he was very flat. And I'm sure that was intentional. Like, he seems to be written that way, but I didn't get much of a sense of the person he is. I could barely even tell that he seemed to like Felix.
Okay.
Because, like, Felix would say things and he'd just ignore him, pretty much. So there was not much going on there. But, like, with the safe cracking, I was like, how many genres are they trying to shove into one episode at this point? Like, it was kind of ridiculous. It felt like they were trying to create a show that's, like, every single genre we can think of. Like, soap opera and heist movie and just, it's all over the place. So I was like, really? We're doing this now? Okay, like, check off the next genre.
Yeah, I did think the heist was a little, it felt... Like, I get that that's what he does, but it felt very out there, which I guess is, like, actually a pretty, now that I think about it, good contrast to the way his character is written as being very, like, stoic and, you know, just kind of drained. And then you have him, like, leading this actually kind of exciting life, stealing diamonds and stuff, you know. But I agree, it did feel... it's like a very stark contrast between like watching Leto and then watching Wolfgang. You know, it's like, it was just very all over the place.
Okay. Interesting. I feel like we get a little bit of a genre change too when we go to Cafias in Africa. So you have like the heist movie, you have like the soap opera, and Cafias in Africa feels to me, because of how much they love Van Damme, like the beginning of a sort of action movie. How did everybody feel about Cafias?
He's so cute.
Aww. He is cute.
He loves his mom. And he likes Jean-Claude Van Damme. That's the funniest thing ever.
The Van Damme and the Bat Van.
This was probably my favorite of the episode. Like, just there was a little bit more lightheartedness and sweetness to this part of the story. So I liked him a lot.
Yeah. And he's an underdog. He's got, you know, a sick mom. He's trying to make this business work, and, you know, people need to go downtown, but sometimes, you know, they can only pay with chickens. So
just save him an egg.
Yep. Just save him an egg.
I mean, he still takes the guy up. Like he accepts the chicken as payment. So you kind of see how kind-hearted, in addition to how he treats his mom, you see how kind-hearted Cafias is in that moment. And I think his, at least to me, his best friend is a great sort of foil to his character, in that while he's very sweet and slightly reserved, like his best friend Jala is very energetic and entertaining. What did you guys think of him? Or Jala? Yeah, Jala.
He's like, you know, he's the great motivator, you know,
the hype man.
Yeah, the hype man. Like, you know, he's trying to get people on the van, and he's, you know, he's realistic about what's going on. He's like, we need to get more people here. Like, everything, you know, he's against the enemy, who are just jerks, but I did like the Batman. That was very funny. Yeah, a lot of van puns. So I'm all over it. I love a good pun.
I like that he was like all about the marketing. Like, we need a Facebook page. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, getting to work is important. And there was a lot of competition there with different sorts of vans and and puns on vans. So a Facebook page man could really, really elevate your business.
Think of the cover photo he could choose. I mean, the options are endless with Van Damme.
And I mean, the art on the van is pretty great.
Now I'm picturing him like posing in front of that painting of Van Damme kicking himself. Like, so you got Caffeus kicking right next to the van painted of Van Damme kicking. And it's kind of a delightful image that just popped into my head.
That sounds adorable. Absolutely adorable. Karen, what did you think about Caffeus's introduction?
It was good. I kind of go back and forth on him a little bit. I think, we got to see his mother and everything, which was really awesome. I think I just always want more from his story because he lives a very different life from everybody else. And I really like that. I think that it's interesting. As also a huge fan of Jean-Claude Van Damme, I can really appreciate his love. Of course I am. You didn't even have to question that. I used to watch a lot of his movies when I was younger. And I do really just love how much she loves Van Damme. And it's definitely like a theme that continues. And I think it's really delightful. But yeah, he's a very sweet guy. And I think that you are right that his best friend is a good foil for him because he can be very serious sometimes. And I think that he's always trying to look out for the people around him, especially his mother. And to be able to kind of come out of that every once in a while is really important, probably for his mental health. But we didn't get to see too much of him in this episode. So I'm curious what everybody will continue to think of him as we move forward in his story.
All right. And then the last character that we meet is Nomi. She is from San Francisco. She is a trans person living in San Francisco. And we see her celebrating Pride with her girlfriend, Amanita. And we kind of get a little bit of backstory as to how they were at their first Pride together and how their relationship has progressed since then. What were everyone's initial reactions to Amanita? Because her being on screen, it's a very different representation than we've seen from any other show before, at least that I've come across.
Martha has come a long way from Doctor Who.
Yep. It's a little shocking if you remember her primarily from Doctor Who.
I don't.
She was my Martha? Favorite companion on Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Is that Amanita?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know she's in Doctor Who. This is interesting. Okay.
And she's awesome and a badass on Doctor Who. She was my favorite. So I was like, hey, love her. And then she has an American accent in this one, which I always just find it super distracting when you know their accent and then they're doing an American one.
I kept forgetting, though, like, it's a good accent.
Yeah, it's a good accent. But when you know that's not their accent, it's a little distracting for
me. Anytime I hear James Marsters speak now, because yes! I did not know that he was American, it still freaks me out so much. I'm like, no, you're British. And, you know, his Wikipedia page is like, please stop saying that. He's not British.
I want to know what Caitlin thought of that sex scene.
I was like, oh, okay. How many minutes in till we got to the first one? Cool. And immediately was like, let's watch through fingers again. I watched a lot of this episode through my fingers. I'll just say that.
Aww. That's fair. I do want to say this, though, because I do get a little secondhand embarrassment as well. Not necessarily with this kind of stuff. And it's much easier. Like, I've kind of gotten past my sex on screen like problem. So that's not as much of a big deal. But I will say that even if it does make you uncomfortable, the sex in this show is, I like it because they're not afraid. They don't turn away. It's not even that glorified. I think sometimes they do it just to do it. sorry.
Karen.
I'm sorry. Where's Mai? She would have laughed at that. But it makes them feel like real people. Like it's normal. It shows their relationships. I think there is a purpose to it, regardless of whether, like, you know, it's like a plot point, like this person sleeping with this person to get information out of them. No, like this is to show you what kind of relationship they have. And if, even if it does make you uncomfortable, I hope that you also are able to see that, like, it does serve a purpose, and that given this is on Netflix and everything, that we don't get to see things like this a lot on television, and that it's very, you know, unique. I wouldn't necessarily say groundbreaking, but it's not something we see a whole lot.
I mean, we definitely don't see dripping dildos a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Rainbow dildos too.
And I mean, a lesbian interracial relationship between, you know, somebody who is trans and another, like, the diversity in this show is just, it's huge. And I think that sort of positive relationship and positive portrayal of it, like, it cannot be undersold.
I appreciate that very much. I just don't need to see all that much of their sex life. Like, it makes me feel like a voyeur, I guess, which
that's valid. That's definitely valid.
Like, I appreciate that they seem to have a very healthy relationship. I love that we get that scene of Amanita standing up for Nomi.
Yes, know me.
Okay.
I forgot about that scene. That scene made me so happy.
And it was just a gorgeous scene. Like, no one's ever stuck up for me before. Just, like, it was very lovely and beautiful. And I loved that. So I love that you get this very healthy, playful, loving relationship between the two of them. And I know that a healthy relationship involves a healthy sex life. Just not really, I don't really need to see a lot of their sex life. Like, have one, please. Have a really great sex life. Just not really my thing is wanting to watch it.
So I find it interesting that it takes place during Pride, because that brings out a lot of opportunities to see more with these characters. I go back and forth on, I think it's a great representation of Pride because we see a whole bunch of different people. But it also kind of is like, yes, here are these characters. They're great. But of course, we're like introducing them during Pride. Did you like the fact that Pride was like a small sort of character in this? Did it feel natural? Did it feel like it was kind of just coming along because of the story?
I think it set it up, the location, well,
mm-hmm.
because clearly they're in San Francisco, and you know, I think it just gives them this freedom that, I don't know, it felt authentic to their story, just having it, you know, be introduced during Pride, setting the location of San Francisco, like how their group of friends and people that they work with and just know, you know, all come together. They watch that play thing, you know, it's just, it really,
that was gorgeous.
Yeah, it really just introduced the setting well, I think, by having it take place during Pride.
And I think that it's so important that this is such like a lens to view this show through, not only for the characters, but obviously for the Wachowski, who are both trans women, and to have Pride be so central. But not only that, I really appreciated the little interaction we got when they went to that the show, and the guy was talking about how he loves that Pride is a celebration, but he also wants to recognize that it didn't start off that way, and that it's important to remember where it came from, and that, you know, our celebration of Pride is because we are remembering all those people who came before. And right now, the big thing that's going around is Hannah Gadsby's Nanette on Netflix. And she talks a bit about like how Pride is a party, but like, where did the quiet gays go? Because Pride can be so big and colorful and enthusiastic, but you know, we can never forget the history of Pride. And I like that the show took the opportunity to celebrate Pride in the way that we celebrate it, but also to remind us where it started and how far we've come.
Yeah, I think it's great. I do find myself going back and forth a little bit, but I think it's very fitting for their characters. And it just kind of opens up the way in which they can show us more of themselves and more of the different facets of themselves. But in kind of talking about whether or not things are stereotypical or not, I wanted to get your guys' opinion. Now that you've met all of the eight characters that we're going to be focusing on, how did you feel about the countries and the jobs, the sexualities that were represented? Did anything feel stereotypical? Did you wish we could have gotten any other kind or any other nationality thrown in the mix? I was wondering if just anything stuck out to you about the mix of people that we have here.
I mean, you already mentioned it, but besides the fact that they are all speaking English, which yeah. I wonder just what the difference would be if they cast actors who spoke those native languages, and some of these actors might, but like use subtitles. I wonder how that would change things.
Yeah, like how effective the show would be if you were having to read a lot of it instead of taking in the visuals more than you would otherwise be. Yeah.
Which is an interesting conversation that people are still having, because Americans aren't particularly used to having to read subtitles unless you watch a lot of foreign movies or a lot of anime, whereas a lot of people outside of the United States, or, you know, especially outside of English speaking countries, they do that all the time. That's how they learn foreign languages a lot of the time. And I think, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but I think if they had subtitles, I think that fewer people would be as interested, because that is very foreign to them. And I'm wondering if maybe they decided to do this because it would open it up a little bit more to a more moderate audience.
But this is a pretty niche show already. Like, I don't see this as a show with a broad general audience appeal in the first place.
This was also one of the first shows, I think, that Netflix really marketed and really like pushed out there. So I just wonder if, you know, people were tuning in because this was like I was saying before, I don't remember if I said this on air last time or not, but you know, nowadays, like, we have a new Netflix show or movie every day. And this was back when, like, that was still a little bit new and interesting and different.
I think one followed, yeah, Daredevil, in that it was one of the first Netflix original series.
That's a good point. I wonder if they started it now, if they would make that same choice.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, other than the English speaking, did you like the different cultures and the different people who were brought in for the show?
Yeah, I think I'll like them more as we get to know them. Like right now, they all kind of seem or like flash in the pan, you know. Like So, it was very much like, especially the opening credits too. Like, first of all, I forgot how long opening credits are on Netflix shows.
Yeah, I did want to ask about those, actually. Please tell me how you feel about those.
They're okay. They're very... The music reminds me of House of Cards a lot, which, like, is an unfortunate comparison. But, yeah, they were beautiful. Like, it was like watching a National Geographic magazine come to life with all the different cool shots of the world.
Either I wasn't paying attention or mine skipped them, because I have no memory of any opening credits.
They're very long. You would have definitely noticed it.
Then my Netflix skipped them.
How rude, Netflix. I love the opening credits. I have a lot of wanderlust, and I'm a big like travel person, and they're just gorgeous. They have like swelling music and like just beautiful, not only city shots and like shots of different landmarks, but just people. Like, they incorporate different people into them as well. So I have always had a soft spot for the credits, to the point where like I'll listen to the opening theme or like the Sense8 theme sometimes on repeat, because I just love it so much. And Karen and I were running a little bit late today, so we had to skip through them, which was very, very sad. Karen was like, are you sure you don't want to watch these? And I was like, yes, it's fine. But I would suggest, if you have a chance at some point, just to watch them once. Force your Netflix to let you watch them.
I think Netflix introduced the setting to like skip opening credits, and I probably
at
some point.
It's like a default at this point, sort of. Yeah.
So
gotcha.
That's probably what happened.
That would make sense. All right. So a lot of this episode was very much character based. There, as we have mentioned before, like not a lot happened really. We got a little bit, actually, at some point during the episode, a little bit of explanation as to, like, Limbank Residence, which is also the title of the show. And that kind of ties into sort of what's going on with all of them in general. There were a few moments of exposition throughout the episode. Did you find them to be, I don't know, helpful, or did they just seem just like throwaway pieces of exposition?
In one ear, out the other.
Okay.
Because it's hard to tell what's important.
Yeah, no, right, I'm now with you on that. I found myself watching in that same way, even knowing that some of the stuff was important or informational as to what's going on.
Yeah, I actually liked I felt like I got more out of the scenes that weren't exposition-y.
Mm-hmm.
I liked them a lot better. And I felt like I got to understand what was going on more just watching these people live their lives. Like, especially, so there's two very contrasting scenes with, I'm sorry, what's the Indian girl's name?
Kala.
Okay. Like, her two scenes were very different in the fact that, like, yes, she was giving exposition when she was praying, but then there's that whole first scene where she's also sort of being like, yes, I went to school. Like, I have my job, I'm getting married, blah, 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 blah. But then there was just that moment where she's looking for an umbrella and it's because she hears thunder, but it's not the thunder of where she is. So like, I liked those moments more than like, yes, I have a job because I went to school and I'm getting married and this is my life story.
The show don't tell.
Yeah,
definitely. I think it's more effective for sure. And we will definitely be getting more of that as the show moves on. But so this was the very first episode. Any final thoughts before we move into favorite scenes and favorite lines?
I want to say that, especially because we were talking about how slow it was in the beginning. I mean, we've kind of trapped, like, you know, these guys here, like they could quit the podcast if they want to, but they like us enough that they'll usually just power through. If we could do it for Buffy, we can do it for Sense8. But I hope listeners who are like, oh, you know, I'll give it a try. If you guys usually listen to us but haven't seen Sense8, keep watching. It is very good. It is slow. It is a show that gently takes you through 8 people's stories and also the way that it interconnects. You basically have like 9 different plot lines to kind of keep hold of. And it can be confusing, but just let it happen, because I think that it has a lot of really great things to say. And I hope that this first episode didn't deter anybody and that you'll give it at least a couple more before you really make a hard call.
I would say that for both the show and our podcast, in that this is harder to podcast actually on than I thought, because it's very much a setup episode. And there are a lot of plot things to talk about. So if it sounds like there's slight awkwardness, it's because I'm trying to figure out how to say things because we don't get a lot, because it is kind of boring and slow moving in this episode. So also stick with us as a podcast.
I keep wanting to be like, but I love Leto so much, except I can't tell you why.
Yeah, I know.
Which is very frustrating.
Yes. All right. Speaking of love, let's move into favorite scenes and favorite lines. I will start with my favorite scene, because we were just talking about Leto, actually. And his introduction is my favorite scene because it's it was an interesting sort of bait and switch. And just because I think his is the one that sticks out to me the most. Even before rewatching this episode, I remembered his intro in that it tricked me and that it was really interesting and it was not Leto as a person. His intro is like Leto as an actor. So I love it. And I still love it to this day. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Leto's introduction is probably actually my favorite because it is so good. And again, like, I just really liked how it tricked me in the beginning. But I would have to say I also really love Nomi and Amanita at their first Pride, because that scene gets to me every time. And I love how Nomi wasn't affected by what that awful woman said to her. She was affected by the fact that Amanita defended her, because nobody had done that before, and how she was just like, this is when I knew, like, I was gonna love you. And it was just so, like, it was heart-wrenching because you really feel for Nomi, but it was also so beautiful in terms of their relationship and what kind of relationship they have, that, like, I was trying so hard not to cry with Danielle sitting right here next to me. But it was really difficult. And it chokes me up every time.
I mean, you could have cried.
I don't like crying in front of people.
It's fine. It's fine. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was, how do you say his name again? Cafius?
Yep, Cafius.
Cafius. Cafius and his mother. Just, it was so sweet. Because he really loves his mom. And it was very sweet. And I like him a lot already.
He's a good guy. Definitely a good guy. Brittany, your favorite scene?
Mine was the prayer scene, or the exposition prayer that Caitlin called it. I just thought it was such a beautiful shot. And it, like to Adiana's point in the doc, it kind of... speaks to the budget that this show has of getting very beautiful locations.
Yeah. Everything is on location. Absolutely everything. It just lends itself to being more authentic. And I agree that that scene is gorgeous. All right. Favorite lines. I will start. My favorite line comes from Leto's introduction. And it's towards the end of his scene that he's doing, where the priest asks, "Have you come to confess your sins, my son?" And Leto goes, "No, Padre, I've come to blow your fucking brains out." And the guy who's playing the priest just goes, "What? I'm sorry, are we going off script?" It's just hilarious, and it's very jarring. And honestly, the "I've come to blow your fucking brains out" like sounds to me like it would be in that sort of script, but also like not that kind of movie, because it's not an American action movie. So I don't know. I loved it. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine actually comes from my favorite scene as well. And it's when Amanita is talking to that awful woman. And she just goes, "Sam, say one more thing about my girlfriend and I will colonize your face with my fist." And it's just, she's so badass. I love her so much. She is not afraid of anything.
She could have taken her down.
Yep.
Caitlin, your favorite line?
So mine was continuing... in my favorite part of the episode was Jella talking to Cafius about, like, Cafius is like, "Maybe Van Damme's time is done." And Jella goes, "Van Damme is a man. He doesn't need costumes and gadgets to fight. He fights with the fist and with his heart. Come on. The muscles from Brussels never die. Don't forget that." I lost it at that point.
The muscles from Brussels.
Like, that's a great motivational speech right there.
He fights with the fist and with his heart.
Oh, boy. And Brittany, your favorite line?
So I was trying to find lines, like, you know, online and stuff like that, because I, like,
it's hard.
I didn't really, like, pick up on anything, so I'm just going to go with the van names. The Bat Van, or it was just so great. I loved all the paintings and stuff on the van, so I'm going to go with all the puns on the vans as my favorite line. I'll try harder next time.
No, I think both Karen and I had trouble coming up with favorite lines as well.
Yeah.
Again, because this is such an introduction sort of episode. There's not a lot of lines that really stick out, but hopefully that'll change as we move forward from here. Now that you kind of have a better idea of at least where the people come from, not so much who they are yet, but we'll get there. All right. So let's move into some listener feedback. If you want to get in contact with us, our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is re_watchable. And you can also reach us on our Tumblr page, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we would love it if you would give us an iTunes review. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will dance in a fairy costume for you. And I think we can all agree that's something that we would love to see. I personally would be very interested in that.
But are pot brownies included?
Oh, they can be. Also, can I just say, this feels so much better than me awkwardly reading this about myself. So thank you.
Good. Good. Yes. But yes, if you could rate us 5 stars, that would be great. We love podcasting and we love getting new listeners and interacting with everyone. And the more 5-star reviews that we can get, the more people that we would be able to have as listeners. And we can just have a bigger family, a bigger cluster, if you will. So rate us 5 stars and maybe we'll all dance in fairy costumes. Who knows? Aww. Depends on if we get those pot brownies or not. All right. So we do have a bit of listener feedback today. We have a few tweets. Karen, would you like to get this first one, please?
Yes. This first one is from Aiden Ayala, who says, looking forward to the podcast. I'm a new listener to the podcast. When do they usually come out? Also, is there a place to discuss the particular podcast episode, Hypeable, Reddit, Twitter? We've never done anything on Reddit before. So as you guys probably know, if you're longtime listeners, especially during the Buffy era, things got a little nuts and we weren't as consistent as we wanted to be. However, this year we are trying very, very hard to put out each episode on Tuesdays. So you can look for it on Tuesdays and then you can know that, you know, by Wednesday morning at the very latest, like, you guys will have a new episode in there. If that starts to not happen, please yell at me. And I will make sure that we are all kind of staying on top of that, but I will take responsibility for the timing. And then in terms of places to discuss, honestly, we do a lot of, you know, discussion on Twitter, which I know is not really good for long form, but we were maybe thinking, and Ariana suggested this, maybe this is, you know, finally time to make a Facebook page for Rewatchable. Yeah, so if, yeah, a group, yeah, be a group so everybody can discuss things. So if you guys would like that or feel comfortable with that, let us know. And that's definitely something that we can set up. And then, you know, we can talk to you guys as well. And that might be kind of cool.
So yeah, just let us know how you would like to interact with us and we can kind of go from there. Cool. Let's see. Brittany, can you get the second tweet, please?
Sure. So our second tweet comes from @NurseBarack, whose name holder on Twitter is This Is The Queer Place, which, hilarious. I love it.
Awesome.
And they say, I'm glad Rewatchable is doing Sense8. Now I have an excuse to rewatch it again. That's what we're here for, giving you that excuse. Yes, I must rewatch this show because people I don't know are talking about it. Love it. So,
I mean, it gave me an excuse to rewatch it again. I've been meaning to do it, and to do it with my friends makes it so much better. So, Caitlin, will you get this other tweet, please?
Sure. This comes from Laura. If I butchered how you'd like that pronounced, sorry. She says, you will fall in love with it by episode 4. A lot of confusion in the first ones, but that's normal.
Hopefully it makes things feel a little bit better. I mean, it's hard to go into a show where people are like, you're supposed to be confused, because me, I like figuring things out and like having a good idea about what's going on. And to have someone tell me like, it's going to be confusing, makes me be like, challenge accepted. And also maybe I don't want this. So it's confusing. It's normal. Please stick with it.
It triggers my Taurus nature of stubbornness and makes me go, yeah, well, maybe you shouldn't be so confusing. And then I walk away.
I get it. I totally get it.
I'm a Taurus in that way.
All right. We have one more tweet and I will take this one, actually. This is from Desi Shai. And they say, Sense8 is the absolute best. Literally every episode is beautiful, an amazingly written show. You will laugh, feel frustrated, cry, feel hope, and so many more emotions within each episode of the seasons that were released. By the end, you'll probably wish you're in the show and want to connect more too. And without giving anything away, I would say I agree. Hashtag no comment.
It does give me hope for humanity and really makes me want to travel a lot.
Yes, very much so, which is hard on my budget and my time off that I get at work, but it's fine. Work around it. All right. So before we say goodbye, it's time for Brittany's brainstorms and Caitlin's conjectures for Sense 8 at Season 1, Episode 2, I Am Also a We. Take it away, guys.
They're going to find each other. Or at least one more of them will be connected, hopefully. I hope it's not exposition heavy. However, I feel like we might be in with that for a while. But the title alone, I Am Also a We, kind of makes sense in that regard that they're going to start to connect to each other, I think. Who do you think is going to connect, Caitlin?
That's a question.
I think I want Sun to connect because she's like really freaked out right now, and I think she just needs to know that it's okay. There are chickens appearing on her desk. She probably needs to know it's okay.
Maybe Wolfgang can connect with someone and actually show some personality.
Ooh, maybe.
I was going to say, we're going to find out there's some evil twins going on, and I is going to turn into a we because someone has an evil twin.
Mm. Are we back to Buffy?
Well, someone has to take up the crazy predictions.
Ah, good call.
All right. Well,
I mean, we do have a Riley.
We do have a Riley.
We've already made our Buffy connections. Mm-hmm. So now we're going evil twins.
Hashtag no comment. And I guess we'll leave it at that. So thank you, everyone, for joining in this discussion. And thank you all for listening. And we will see you next time for Sense8 Season 1, Episode 2, I Am Also a We. Until then, I am Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Caitlin.
See you guys.
Bye.
So, I'm not on mute. For some reason, I'm now like nervous that I'm on mute all the time.
See, I was going to say I am also.
Hey, you guys, you want a wild Kristen to say hi?
Kristen.
Say hi for the audience.
Oh, God.
Hi, everyone.
There she is. I
wanted to make sure there was any range of
you. Sorry, Caitlin, for interrupting you. We edit for a reason.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry to whoever edits this.